today, credit fudge, anyone? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. The RBA released their data to the end of July today. Off the bat, it should be noted that they made a number of reporting changes and the growth rates have been adjusted, as well as applying seasonal adjustments, which we assume will be based on earlier years, although of course this year might be unique. This data shows the total domestic lending commitments, allowing for new loans written, old loans repaid or refinanced. So this is in effect net stock movements. In the D1 data, we see that owner-occupied lending growth for the past 12 months fell again down to 4.9%. Investment housing lending was down to 0.3% over the last 12 months, and so total housing growth fell from 3.5% to 3.3% over the last year. That's another record low. Business lending grew at 3.9% over the last 12 months, and personal lending fell 3.7%, and total credit grew just 3.1%. So there's no evidence of any pickup on these annualised numbers. Housing credit growth has moved lower over recent years, from 7.4% in 2015, 6.3% in both 2016 and 17, to 4.7% in 2018. And the latest annual reading at 3.3% is the weakest in the history of the series, which goes right back to the late 1970s. And the previous cyclical low was 4.4% in early 2013. The one-month numbers show a small rise in unoccupied loans from 0.2% last month to 0.5%, a level last seen in September last year. Investment lending fell 0.1%, personal credit fell 0.4% from the previous month, and business lending was up from 0% last month to 0.2% this time. Even for those with a bullish disposition, this is a weak result, and this data is always noisy, so there is really little to see which signals any improvement. In fact, momentum in housing credit, the three-month annualised growth pace, was 2.6% currently, moderating from 6.8% in mid-2017. And by segment, three-month growth was 4.4% annualised for owner-occupiers and down 0.5% for investors. And turning to business credit, this grew by 3.9% over the past year, up from 3% for 2017, but still it represents a moderation from gains of 6.4% in 2015 and 5.5% in 2016. So it's true to say there is little evidence to show any result of the stimulus from lower cash rates or APRA's loosening so far. Now, that of course chimes with our recent household surveys, which begs the question, where then are the supposed home price rises coming from? Perhaps the ABS flow data in a few days will tell us more, but I remain sceptical. On any basis, property investors are still sitting on the sidelines. But we also know the RBA has done some heavy tweaking to the data. This is because the raw D2 data shows big swings between owner-occupied and investment lending between June and July, thanks to their revisions. This is what they say. From this release onwards, the financial aggregates incorporate an improved conceptual framework and a new data collection. This is referred to as the Economic and Financial Statistics, the EFS collection. All growth rates have been adjusted for the effect of series breaks resulting from these changes, and minor revisions to the historical growth rates of the financial aggregates reflect improvement in the RBA's seasonal adjustment processes. Revisions to the historical growth rates of the money aggregates, specifically M3 and broad money, also reflect methodological improvements in their production. The implementation of the EFS collection has led to larger than usual movements in the levels of the outstanding stocks of series published in the table Lending and Credit Aggregates D2 between June and July 2019. In particular, the EFS Collections seeks to resolve ambiguity about the classification of finance according to its purpose and residency. The sample of entities participating in the collection has also changed, and the measurement of housing credit extended by non-authorised deposit-taking institutions has improved, and some of the key changes resulting from the EFS collection are reclassifications between owner-occupied loans and investor loans, housing loans and other personal loans, and loans to resident and loans to non-residents. Loans to non-residents are not included in the credit aggregates. In combination, these changes have led to decreases in the level of total credit, business credit, housing credit, and owner-occupied credit, and increases in the levels of other personal credit and investor housing credit. In contrast to the published growth rates, the levels of the credit aggregates are not adjusted for series breaks, and growth rates should not be calculated from data on the levels of credit as usual. All growth rates for the financial aggregates are season adjusted and adjusted for the effects of breaks in the series as recorded in the notes to the tables. Data for the levels of financial aggregates are not adjusted for series breaks. And the RBA credit aggregates measure credit provided by financial institutions operating domestically. They do not capture cross-border or non-intermediated lending. So, more data noise in the machine. Now let's turn to the APRA data, who released their monthly statistics to the end of July 2019, and they're rubbish in terms of trend tracking because of the revised method of data capturing. The value of investment lending rose considerably, offset by a fall in owner-occupied loans. As we said, the RBA said that there were some reclassifications of loans between owner-occupied and investment, plus offshore and onshore borrowers. This comes through in the APRA data too. The changes from last month are therefore considerable. Westpac made the largest switch, with $40 billion worth dropping from the owner-occupied side of the house. Other lenders were also switching loans across. That said, the overall portfolio mix by lenders changed less, but the proportion of investment loans jumped to 37.6% compared with 33% the previous month. This means that banks are even more exposed to investment lending than had been previously reported. Given the size of the changes, it's impossible to tell what is happening within individual lenders, which may be convenient. So we will have to start from this point as a series break going forward. And for the record, the value of owner-occupied loans fell 5% from $1.13 trillion to $1.10 trillion, while investment loans rose by 16% from $557.3 billion to $647.4 billion. Total housing lending rose from $1.68 trillion to $1.72 trillion, up by more than 2%, but this is meaningless. And frankly, this is a joke. And I feel it is designed to hide, not inform. The investment debt bomb just got bigger. And if you want another laugh, look at the latest dwelling approvals, which were released by the ABS today. Dwelling approvals recorded a sharp 9.7% drop in July, coming out against expectations that the stabilisation shown last month would consolidate this time. The fall takes approvals to a 6.5-year low, down 28% on a year ago. Total approvals are now tracking materially below underlying demand for the first time since 2013. As is often the case with big monthly moves, the falls were concentrated in unit approvals, which posted an 18.4% drop, to be down 44.2% across the year. The detail points to similarly sized monthly falls across both high-rise and medium-density units, with a particular weak read on high-rise approvals in New South Wales. The July fall takes high-rise approvals to a new low. While this is still broadly consistent with the lead from site purchases, the risk is that continued stress in the sector is leading to more projects being delayed or cancelled, and a possible further leg lower in approvals. Detached house approvals were also weak in the July month, recording a 3.3% fall, and that's a sizable move for what is normally a more stable component. The state detail shows very mixed results, with unusually big falls in Victoria, down 10.9%, and Western Australia, 14.5%, but strong gains in New South Wales at 10.1%. Some of the weakness in Victoria may reflect the transition to a new building permit system and other changes to duties and concessions. But on a combined basis, approvals, excluding high-rise, were down about 6% over the month nationally, considerably weaker than the stabilising signal from construction-related finance approvals in recent months. And weaknesses are centred on Victoria, down 7.2% over the month, Queensland down 7.6%, and Western Australia down 4.4%. Approvals excluding high-rise were up slightly in New South Wales, up 0.3%, and more firmly up in South Australia at 3.9%. And the total value of renovation approvals rose 0.4% in July, but is about flat in trend terms, having declined slightly in the June quarter. And the total value of non-residential building approvals fell 9.9%, reversing most of the 10.5% jump in July. And looking beyond the monthly volatility, approvals are showing some signs of flattening out from what had been a reasonably solid rising trend. The detail shows trends continue to vary significantly across retail, warehouses, hotels, and health, still showing solid gains on a six-month basis, but education down sharply and offices off its most recent peak. So overall, the July update is clearly much weaker than expected and raises the risk that building activity may take a step lower again. This points to job losses in the construction sector, and perhaps it's time to discuss the recession in construction, alongside that in retail. So both the approvals data and the credit data all points to lower growth ahead and to a weaker GDP outturn. And all of this, to my mind, puts more questions on whether home prices really are recovering anything like the hype. We suspect not. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.